Thank you. So welcome back, everyone, to the main room. So we've got two topics to discuss around primary financial statements. And I wonder first, Bruce, if I could go to you for the feedback from Group 1 on FX gains and losses.
Thanks, Nick. Yeah, we had a really good conversation with the team in terms of our question. Just to remind you, we were taking a look at the FX portion or the FX disclosures in the statement of profit or loss, and whether we would do the splitting out or the single line. I think it's fair to say that of the people who were on the call and the discussions we had, the majority of the guys, especially on the preparer side, really said that you've got to understand that companies kind of do this one way or the other. So either their systems have been set up, in which case they will be doing things on the basis where they are collecting that information, they are getting their treasury systems are set up, their financial reporting systems set up, that would allow them to pull that information. And then there are other companies who don't. So they may have a central treasury doing this or one company within the group or somebody, in which case they don't have the information to draw from those two things. I think one of the key takeaways for me on that was that if you're doing it the one way, to move to the other way is going to be very, very costly. So if you're a company who's got the granularity at the moment, that's great. To split it out will be easy. But if you're not a company who's capturing that level of granularity at the moment, to then meet the requirements within the proposals to now go and have to split that between the various categories is going to require quite a large systems change. And that large systems change, the feeling would be quite costly. I think it was actually quite interesting that even one of the comments made in the group was that of one of the companies looking at potentially early adopting, they said this one factor alone would stop them early adopting the standard, as it's just for them would be such a big change in terms of what they're doing, that would become quite tricky. So I think that's very important to understand that the systems just haven't been geared for the unbundling. I think another point that came out of it was also that the cost that you've got to also assess whether the numbers are material. So, you know, to go into this and see whether or not this is, a lot of us may just look at the net number and say, oh, well, if you look at the net gains or losses, that's not material. But the challenge on that could be to work out whether that's material by grossing it up or not is actually going to be quite a costly exercise. And the companies could be going through quite a lot of cost to get to a stage of realizing, well, actually, this isn't material. But once again, without the systems changes, that would be difficult. So, I think the expectation is that there's going to be different views based on what your company is doing. And if your company was doing it the one way, you wouldn't mind. But if you had to go and introduce systems to do those proposals, that will be a challenge. What was very interesting is on the other side for the guys who are the user side, they felt that there wasn't really a great need for everybody to do this the same way, providing the right disclosures were in place. So I think one of the key messages we kind of took out of that was as long as if you're a user of the financial information, you can understand what those risks are, how they're managed, and I think also the effectiveness or how successful management have been in terms of how they're delivering on those. So, for example, if the exposures are huge one way and huge the other, well, we don't just want to see a net. We want to understand where's it going on both sides and what's caused that. And that could be done by disclosure. One of the interesting things that was discussed within the group was, I think I tried to coin it almost as something, almost a management approach that said, if we said to companies, you could do it one or the other. So assuming we changed and said, well, we're actually going to give you an accounting policy choice that says you can either do it on the gross basis, so splitting it by category, or we'll let you do it on a net basis, obviously with appropriate disclosures on some of the issues we discussed. Would that limit the comparability? And the feedback from the group was they didn't really believe that was going to limit the comparability, providing, once again, the disclosures were in place to allow people to assess the effectiveness and understand what the risks were, whether that's done in the MDA, whether that's done in the notes, along with things like the IFRS 7 disclosures. We would have to unpack that just a little bit more. But I think it's very important to understand that people could do this in different ways. So I think, to be fair to the group, I think some of the key messages, as we're saying, one, there is going to be the implementation challenges for companies who aren't doing it that way. And two, when we asked, I think drawing on that, on the comparability side from the user side, there wasn't a need for everybody to be doing this the same way. So maybe that's something for us to take out of that. And if anybody else who's in the group has got a comment, but otherwise I'll hand back to you at this stage, Nick.
Thanks, Bruce. Does before I go over to Zach, does anyone in Group 1 want to add to Bruce's very neat summary? No, don't think so. So you managed to get those words out, accounting policy choice, which you avoided in our breakout, but I think you might have got away with it in this session. So Zach, I know your group touched on this. Is there anything, any further perspective to add from your group?
I think Bruce covered it. I think the biggest thing that came out of the group was, from the user perspective, being able to have that split of where the FX goes is fairly important in doing their analysis. And there was even some discussion that probably moved over into the realm of the agenda consultation about whether further disclosure is needed.
To me, that's a slightly different conclusion. So the users in your group would go along with the existing board proposal to allocate the Forex gains and losses to the different categories. They felt that was important.
I think they appreciated wherever, as long as the disclosure there, but there was a slight preference for having the split, yes.
Okay, understood. Okay, anyone else like to chime in on this one before we move on to NPMs from either group? Just flag in the chat if you'd like to speak. I can see Ian has, I think Ian, you put your hand up and then we'll go to Glenn. Ian first.
Yeah, maybe just a brief one. I think the point maybe for the board to consider is this really that critical a point? Because it's actually, in terms of implementation, it's a real bit of a showstopper. And I get the impression from reading through what is a very important exposure draft, if significant numbers of preparers were having to delay implementation just because of this particular topic, I think that's, I'm not sure that's what you necessarily want. I'm not sure this particular clause is the most critical part of the whole exposure draft and whether it's one you really want to take a very strong line one or the way or the other. I think it shouldn't be a free choice, but it should be based on the way management views it. And I think management should have to explain why it is and support that and give the appropriate disclosure. But then beyond that, I think there's a reasonable compromise there to be had that would not sort of jeopardize the rest of the exposure draft. Because I think it would be unfortunate if a lot of preparers were having to delay implementation just for this one particular topic.
Great. Thank you. Glenn.
Can you hear me?
We can. Fantastic.
Oh, good. I just wanted to, I wasn't able to participate because I had technical issues in the group that I was in. But I just want to record, you know, I think Bruce has summarized the overall feeling in that group correctly. But I was the dissenter. And I dissent, and I think both that the disclosures are important, and I think that the cost depends on what it is, but I think a huge cost is worth incurring to get these disclosures right, even if it takes a long time. So I don't think it necessarily has to be done in the next year or the next 2 years, but this is an important disclosure, and I'll come back to that firstly. And secondly, I don't agree with Bruce on the multiple disclosures. There's no point in standards that tell people that they can do different things to record the same transaction. It's better to be silent and for the IASB to save its firepower for the areas where there is consensus or where it can force through a consensus on a standard, because by definition, a standard is something that everyone follows. Otherwise, it's not a standard, it's multiple standards, in which case it may as well be anything. And I just want to come back to why I think these disclosures are important. The most important thing in investing today is not actually predicting the path of profits and that kind of thing. The most important thing today is understanding foreign currency exposures and movements. And that's because today the dollar plays a really, really central role, and it's grown in the world economy. And everybody else in the rest of the world has to find a way of accessing dollars one way or another. And if they don't access the dollars on the asset side, it creates a mismatch in their balance sheets. And we see this in the UK banks, we see this in insurers, we see this in the Swiss companies, see it in the Japanese companies, etc. understanding this is the to me is the single biggest key to getting investment right. If you could predict, for example, the path of if you could see what exposures UK companies had to sterling to the dollar versus sterling, you would have done much better in terms of making money out of the UK companies than anybody who has taken a long view on sterling has been able to do. And that's partly because the companies don't report it and the investors don't have the information to make the decision. So I know this is a minority opinion, but I think it's a very well-informed opinion, if I may say so.
Thanks, as ever, Glenn. Let's go to Rosemary next.
So I was going to say, Glenn, it was unfortunate you couldn't speak on our call or in our group, but I understand your perspective and your concern. I don't think we were disagreeing with that. All we were saying is, I think the question was, do we have to split that number on the P&L? And I think what we are exploring is that you don't necessarily have to split it, but you should, to your point, be able to understand where the exposures are and the impact of that exposure on an organization, so that you can better, in their decision making on whether to invest or not invest, or just understand how a business is impacted by currency, we're able to do that. So I agree with what you're saying, Glenn. I completely agree. I my perspective was more from, could you get that same information in note disclosures so that you understand, what is the exposure? Because if you have a number on the P&L, it doesn't really tell you where that loss is coming from. It's coming from either operating or it's coming from, finance or investing. It doesn't really tell you the underlying exposure of what has caused that FX gain or loss. So that's really where I was coming from. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thanks, Rosemary. Aida, sorry, you, I think, had some further comments.
Marietta already commented. I just want to share in the group too, we did not every CMAC member got to speak on this, but it was more consistent with the view that, Glenn and Rosemary just expressed. And I think particularly, I don't know, Anthony, if you wish to comment on this further, but we heard feedback that understanding, for example, Forex on debt is quite important to help understand movements on debt and explain movements on debt. And you can't understand that if all of the Forex is in single line, which is in some cases today. So I don't know, disclosure or presentation, it doesn't really matter, because if you need to disaggregate, you need to disaggregate, right? So that doesn't alleviate the costs to prepare us necessarily.
Although I think the Forex translation on debt gets caught in the IS7 reconciliation. So there is some information. It may be that it's scattered throughout the financial statements that may be the issue that we need to think about.
I think Nick, that was my comment that Ida's just referred to. And I think the difficulty for us is we're quite often looking at things like debt to EBITDA, and if your currency moves, you can obviously have debt going up and EBITDA going down. The IS7 rec is helpful, but it tells you the foreign currency on the debt. It doesn't tell you whether that's in reserves or in the income statement. So actually knowing the amount of foreign currency on the debt in the income statement is quite important. But I agree with all the other comments as well that this disclosure is one thing, but you also want to understand what risks the company is exposed to, because if currency's not moving, there's nothing in the P&L. But actually, there could be quite significant exposures out there. And it's a sort of bugbear of mine that, IAS 21, in accounting terms, fulfills its purpose, but I don't think it provides enough disclosure, enough information to understand exactly what companies are doing with FX. And having one line in the P&L which says gains on FX and another line which says losses on FX, when you've no idea what those relate to and what's generating them, just isn't very helpful.
So there may be a couple of issues here. One may be about how these items get presented, and then there may be some disclosures around risk management more broadly in terms of FX exposures. I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Sorry, we've had generally, if I could ask people to speak rather than put comments in the chat, because the chat can't be seen publicly. So I don't know if anyone has anything further to add at this stage on the issue. Otherwise, we'll move on to the other topic. And could I just remind everyone to mute, because I'm getting some feedback at this end as well? Okay, I don't see anyone else putting up their hand or asking to speak. So let's move on to the second topic. So over to you, Zach.
Let me know on your way back.
Jen, I think you need to mute. Thank you. Zach, over to you.
Sure. So the next topic we had was on the issue of cross-referencing. And I would say there was a good amount of consensus across both the preparers and users in our group, which shortened the discussion quite a bit, which was that while it was an interesting proposal, neither felt that it was in the best interest of their group, either as preparers or users. Some of the reasons that we heard was that it could raise difficulties with the regulators in terms of what was allowed that would be regime specific and difficult to get through. We had some past experiences with cross-referencing and auditors where it wasn't allowed, so it could be difficult in that part. And then for the user base, we also heard that it would make distinguishing between alternative performance measures and management performance measures more difficult. And so there was this sense that if you had one node that included all the management performance measures, you'd know exactly where it was, you would know what was audited, and that was clearly a plus. And then the last reason was completeness. I think from the user base, there was a sense that when things are cross-referenced, you're always wondering what you've missed and where it is. And so if there's a footnote and everything is included directly in the financial statements, then you would know exactly what you had. So I think there was pretty much consensus in the group that they would prefer not to see cross-referencing used for the management performance measures. I don't know if anyone wanted to add.
So perhaps, Zach, I can just ask a question either to you or to the group. So that was a consensus from across both GPF and CMAC members. Okay.
Yes.
Because I guess the request for looking at this is coming from preparers, and we've seen it in a number of comment letters. But clearly our preparers today are comfortable, it sounds like, or the optimum solution is to have them all in one place as proposed in the exposure draft.
I would say smaller sample size, but we didn't see any disagreement among the group.
Yeah. Okay. Ian, I see you would like to come in.
I'd like to make some disagreements. the cross-referencing, I mean, from the Swiss Holdings group, the cross-referencing was actually a pretty key point from our comment letter, because it was felt that having unusual items, alternative performance measures, management performance measures is just, it was confusing for us, and we felt it would be confusing for the readers. In our area, we're really looking to the ESMA guidelines on APMs, and pretty much that's the sort of the gold standard. And the feeling from the preparers in Switzerland was rather that you could take the APMs and you could take ESMA, or you could take someone else, but you could take a definition of what your APMs are, put it in a separate report, have some kind of compliance audit statement around that. And actually, that would actually be much more helpful than having some of the MPM, some of the APMs are MPMs, some of the APMs aren't MPMs, they're in different places. We felt that would, and then you've got the whole unusual items sort of effect coming in. We found that to be rather confusing, and we think there might be a better answer might be to have a sort of a project with the regulators and actually get some alignment and build on what already exists from people like ESMA, and which, by the way, certainly in Switzerland, I can assure you our auditors are all over these things. So there may not be an audit opinion on those numbers, but they are pretty heavily looked at. So I think there's actually an easier route to satisfying the concerns than what's in the ED.
I guess one of the challenges that we deal with is that we have many different regulators potentially to deal with across 144 jurisdictions who have some have a stronger mandate than others, let's say. And I think this was one way of trying to lift the bar for everyone. Any other thoughts on location of NPM information from either group? That doesn't seem to be the case. Aidan Ilhong, do you have any further questions? Have you got everything you need on the NPM question?
So Zach has summarized, we had the two mini topics and Zach has summarized the first, but we haven't really, Zach, you were going to discuss the second next, right? So
Apologies. Before we do that, James, sorry, let me just see. James, did you want to come on this particular aspect?
Just to say, I fall very much in the financial statements reconciliation school on this.
So. Okay. Thanks, James. Let me hand back to Zach then.
Yeah, so the good news is the second topic was we talked about the scope of the MPMs, and there'd been some discussion on expanding those, and we wanted to get a sense from both the preparers in the group and the users, CMAQ and GPF. And interestingly, there was fairly strong consensus again on some expansion of the scope among the group. I think where the discussion tended to move was the extent to which it should be expanded, if it was, and where we could draw those lines with even the proposal of a new definition. So I think highlighting first the two metrics that came up again and again, which were free cash flow and return on capital employed, as two things both the preparers and the users would love to see included in the definition. And I think as the discussion evolved, one of the participants even suggested that we could define a management performance measure to be anything that could be reconciled directly to an IFRS item in the financial statements. So certainly a move beyond where the line is currently set, and set up an additional discussion of things like for like definitions and whether they would fall within those, or some of the specific metrics seen in the insurance industry or the utilities industry, where there was less consensus. And I think if there was a majority, it was probably leaning against including those individual items, perhaps not like for like as much as some of the more specific ones. So I will pause there.
Thanks, Zach. Let me open it up to anyone from either group who has views on this subject. We've got a couple of... Sharif, over to you to begin with.
Yeah. I would like to add one point here is that if any MPM can be derived directly from the income statement or the balance sheet, that is something which I think which should be recognized here. In addition to return on capital employed, we have EBITDA, and I also understand that the board is not interested in recognizing ratios. Could you please expand on that? Because some of the ratios, like leverage ratios, etc., are very commonly used and used by management in their performance measures.
So I think when we started this project, this has been a controversial area for the board to get involved with. And indeed, when we first put out our proposals, even for bringing in a very limited fashion these non-GAAP performance measures, these P&L measures, into the financial statements, you know, we had very a wide spectrum of response to that. So some were relaxed about it, but there were others who saw this as an affront almost to include this in the IFRS numbers. So I think in many respects, you know, this has been a tentative and cautious approach. Now, what I would say is what we've seen in recent months is more of a discussion, people being much more open to think about scope issues. And I think what we're just seeing discussions of ratios and other issues, whether it be free cash flows, is more of a desire than we had seen hitherto to expand the scope. So the discussion has evolved in an interesting way amongst our stakeholders since we first put our proposals out.
Just a follow-up question on this. In terms of management performance measure, is there any alignment in this project between IFRS and US GAAP?
My understanding is that in essence, non-GAAP measures are covered by the SEC in the States. And so it's the FASB, I don't think, would be able to enter this territory. The governance really comes through SEC oversight.
Okay.
Great. Let's go to Ian next.
Just a quick one on I can maybe talk briefly to free cash flow, because it was one of the first things I did when I came to Roche about 20 years ago. Folks use free cash flow because they're unhappy with IS7. It's unfortunate. I read in the discussions, but it's unfortunate this project didn't really delve into IS7. I understand why that's done, but I think if there's a wider project coming on IS7, you maybe want to think about doing that before you then start legislating on free cash flow, because I think if we look at IS7 and we get it right, I think a lot of folks will actually stop using free cash flow. It's not that embedded in the system compared to some of the non-GAAP measures on the income statement. I think that would be, you could possibly get rid of free cash flow if IS7 was comprehensively looked at. I know that's a long-term project, but it's just a strategic point. If IS7 may be coming on the agenda for a fundamental relook, you maybe don't want to invest too much looking at free cash flow right now.
That's a good point, Ian. Thank you. Let's see what our stakeholders ask us to do in the next work plan. Marietta.
I was actually the person who suggested that anything that can be reconciled directly to an IFRS number should be allowed as an MPM. And I just wanted to clarify that my thinking behind that was that I think that's very consistent with the whole spirit of the MPMs, because basically the idea is to take what is currently APMs, or at least some of them, and bring them into the financial statement to impose rigor and transparency and make them auditable. But obviously the auditor is really just going to be looking at the individual recon items and check whether they make any sense. And nobody is taking any kind of view at all on the current MPMs, whether they actually are useful to users in a particular analytical context. So to me, adding the possibility to have anything as an MPM that can be reconciled directly to an IFRS measure seems to be a very minor extension of, you know, what is the philosophy behind the MPMs anyway. And I just really wanted to throw that in.
Thanks, Marissa. Sandy. Hi, can't hear you, Sandy. I think you're mute.
Sorry.
That's better.
I just wanted to focus just on the management performance measures as defined within the exposure draft. One of the questions was, should the disclosure be net of tax and net of non-controlling interest? And I think if you're looking at an overall earnings number, I think that makes sense. But if you're doing a grouping of costs, so in our industry, lifting costs is very important for our upstream business, and it's adds together a number of different line items in the income statement. To then go and calculate the after-tax and our share of that, I think would be a step too far. And I don't think that that's what you're are looking for if you are just picking up certain expense line items. But I don't agree that we should at this time look at expanding the management performance measures beyond the areas that are related to the income statement now.
Thanks, Sandy. Any other further comments around the scope of the MPM proposals? So Ida has a point to add, and also Anthony. Ida,
can I give my turn to Anthony?
Yeah, you absolutely. Yeah, feel free.
Oh,
Anthony.
Ida, you did such a great job summarizing my comment from the FX, but I don't know, this one you might have to read. But I'm just going to reiterate what I said back when we were in our group. About moving forward with the MPMs. I think, as you alluded to earlier, Nick, this discussion has been going on literally for years, whether it was on the agenda directly or whether it was being bounced around as how could we do it. So I think any movement we can make to get the MPMs in the financial statements and have them be audited and get everybody on board with that is a very positive move. And a step towards improving. And then if we get comfortable with that and how they're presented, I think we can add other MPMs. We'll understand how the process worked, and we can then begin to tweak it. But the longer we delay, the more there's going to be issues that come up. And I think more pressure we feel from the marketplace to say, why aren't you guys doing anything about this?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that's been a very helpful discussion. Ida, do you or anyone else on the team have any further comments or questions, clarifications before we close
Thanks.
This session?
Thanks, Nick. So my point was quite related to what Anthony just said, because one of the questions we had in the group is around the risks of expansion of MPMs. And I think to Anthony's point, there was some debate around, the value of just finalizing what we have versus risks of, expansion that will require, additional work, testing, and, it could raise potential questions. So I just want to kind of put that out there, that we had this debate in the group.
Great. And just before we close this section, I see Lily Anna would like to make a comment on hedging.
It is a good comment, and it is something that could be relating to the Forex place in the P&L. For the Forex, I have no problem. I can provide the required information. It's not my problem. What I asking you when you are saying that the hedging instrument that is used for the management risk purposes but was not qualified under the hedging accounting, if it is for management purposes, I need to put it in operating, even if it's not classified for the hedging transaction. That means that if it is not classified for hedging transaction, I have all the mark-to-market into P&L, and I need to put all the mark-to-market relating to this P&L in the operating. Maybe we need to discuss a little bit on that.
Nick or Aida, do you have any comment or feedback on?
So maybe I just to clarify, because that's what the proposal is asking, is if that risk management, so if that derivative is being used to manage the risks in operating, then it would go into operating. If it was managing the risks in financing, for example, we'd go in financing. So it's not. I took the impression there that you were of the opinion that it would all go in operating. That would only be the case when it's managing the risk in operating, and the idea being to offset those income or expenses that the purpose of that derivative is to offset. So I'm hoping that that clarifies, but if I've missed something there, please let me know.
No. I understood this point, but maybe I expressed myself badly. The question is, for instance, let's suppose that I'm making a hedging for a forecast transaction that is not qualified as highly probable. It's not, I cannot qualify it as highly probable, but management want nevertheless to put in place a hedging transaction. This forecast transaction, let's suppose that is a sale. So it is operating. The mark to market of this instrument is operating, and I will have all the impact, not through OCI, I will have all the impact of this hedging instrument in the year where maybe the transaction is not materialized. This is something that is perturbing me.
Okay, well, let us give that some further thought, and perhaps if we need to follow up with you directly, we can do that.
Yes, it will
so
be.
So I think. Okay, thank you. So I think that completes this session. Again, thank you to everyone for your inputs, being very helpful indeed.